Welcome back, followers. On today's episode, we've got Dr. Julie Liefeld here to talk about reentry shock. So this was a two-parter. If you haven't listened to part one, you should definitely go and check that out. It is primarily Kristen talking about her experience with her husband being deployed with the United States military and then coming home. So for her and her family, reentry shock is real and it's a well-known thing. It's something that I did not know a lot about, and I'm so grateful that Kristen really insisted that we talk about this on the podcast because it really is something that's super important, and I think a lot of people are going to be experiencing as the stay-home orders are being lifted with COVID-19, and now we're like being reintegrated back into society, and what does that mean? So Julie is here to kind of provide the clinical perspective on the matter. Julie is a registered nurse, a licensed marriage and family therapist, and she received her PhD in human development and family studies with a focus on trauma and positive youth development. Kristen and I both know Julie from the yoga shop. Surprise, surprise, right? So Julie helps run the 300-hour teacher training program with the yoga shop with the co-owners Annie Q and Kim Charbonneau. Julie also runs the Live Free, Live Big life coaching certification through the yoga shop, and that's where Kristen and I both got our certifications to be life coaches, and that's where I met Julie. So Kristen met Julie from her 300-hour program. I have yet to do that, but we both really look up to Julie and view her as a huge mentor just in our development of being yoga teachers, life coaches, and just women. She is an awesome woman to look up to. We also want you to know that all of the services that we talk about in this episode in regard to free therapy, free yoga, all of that, it's linked below in the details of this episode. The phone numbers, the website, it's all there. If you want to learn more about Julie, her Psychology Today profile is linked there as well. And the books and other references are all there. So check it out. And for now, listen and enjoy this episode, you guys. Well, welcome, Julie.
Thank you. Excited.
Yeah. Thank you for being on. Kristen and I are so pumped to have you. We were singing your praises left and right. We have both learned so much from you. Kristen has gotten to spend a little bit more time with you in the 300-hour teacher training program with the yoga shop. And yeah. I had the privilege of getting to know you with the life coaching program this past winter. Fun. Yeah, that's awesome. Do you mind just kind of giving us a little introduction to your work and what you're doing right now, both during this quarantine and when quarantine is not happening? And
Sure. I'd love to. And thank you so much, because I love to talk. As you both know, I love to talk about all these concepts. And I think that your podcast brings us some new, fresh ideas about how to think about things. And that's what the world needs, right? So who am I and what do I do? So I am a professor at, recently promoted, at Southern Connecticut State University, and I teach graduate students in marriage and family therapy. And my interest as a family therapist, so I have obviously should be a private practitioner, which I am. I work with mostly adults who have experienced trauma in their childhood or young adulthood, and how that impacts their transitions and their families. So I work mostly with families who are dealing with trauma, but my favorite age and stage is, and gender, I guess, is people who identify as female and how they are going through their young adult life. That's my, and then into, you know, all the different stages that we go through as women. I teach yoga for the yoga shop, as that's how I got to meet both of you, which is amazing. And I think that's all I do. So I teach and I teach and I teach and I do therapy.
And you have a lot of credentials.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. That we've gone over, but I feel like now I need to ask you again. I asked you right before because I said it incorrectly. Tell us what your PhD is in, because we want to clarify that.
Sure. So the marriage and family piece comes from my master's degree at the University of Connecticut. And then I loved it so much in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies that I went on to get a doctorate. And the focus of that kind of human development family studies doctorate was trauma-focused therapies, right, and positive youth development. Like, what makes my question in my doctoral work was, what makes a difference when things aren't great? You know, that's something important for us to understand, because we spend a lot of time, particularly in America, saying these are bad things that are happening, and bad things are happening, and bad things are happening in schools and on the streets and in homes. That's absolutely true. We have great statistics on that, right? But I think as practitioners and as people that want to make a difference in the world, we really need to understand the elements that make things better, right? What things change things when things aren't great? Because we know we don't want anyone to have a bad upbringing. We don't want anybody to have anything bad happen to them. I wish that that was true. Ahimsa, you were just talking about Ahimsa before we started recording, or non-harming. I wish that that was a principle we all could follow and apply, but it just isn't the way we are. And so when developmental impacts happen, yes, we have to figure out ways to restore that later in life. And that's what's fascinating about working, particularly with young adults and emerging young adults. Like, how do you kind of turn the boat around when things weren't that great? Even if your parents or guardians were trying super hard, you know, things happen, right? Life can be a random and sometimes negative. Look at this pandemic. That feels negative and random, right? So that's kind of where my interest has stayed most of my, 1996, I started doing therapy.
That was a great year, and that's not embarrassing at all.
Yeah.
Please don't tell me you were born that year. Please no. Don't tell me you were born that year. Okay.
No. Maybe Dana, no.
1993.
Oh. Yay, just my daughter. So I hope that, does that make sense? Did that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we were talking a little bit about how the topic of the episode is reentry shock. And I honestly don't know if that's the right term, because technically that term is based on the fact that someone goes away from their country, home base, and then they come back and they expect home base to be the same. And and people have changed and moved on. And even just your home is different, or relationships have evolved, but you haven't grown with them.
Well, we have great data on this. We have great information from our colleagues in the military, right? We actually started a program at Southern for families of enlisted who were coming back to be parents again. You know, so since we're all family therapists, and we run a training clinic there for the master's students. And I think that reentry shock is a perfect name for adjustment shock, right? Adjustment to any human mammal is going to be shocking, right? When we change, just think, I usually use this example when I teach big, gigantic classes about reentry shock, which I'm going to steal from you now, Kristen. So I'll let the lecture hall fill up. You know, you can have 100, you're teaching those like 100, 200 level classes at the university. And when I was at UConn, a graduate assistant, no less. And you get them all, and they're all like in their seats. And I say, okay, so we're going to teach from the back of the room, right? And everyone gets upset, right? Something as small as, and I do this with my therapist candidates too, I'm going to move to the back of the room. People feel some kind of way about that, right? Right? Because humans like to have predictable experiences, right? They like to know what's going to happen. And that can be, you know, if you are naturally introverted and shy, you want your seat, you don't want that jarred, you want to be able to predict. And that's sort of a fight or flight thing. You can get people pretty anxious by shaking the container. Imagine if we changed our whole world. Oh, wait, we did change our whole world, right? So I think that you're spot on to use something as expressive as the word reentry shock. And that'll be, I think what's especially valuable about this podcast that you are creating is that you will normalize for people that even if they feel privileged and they're having struggles getting back out there, it's okay. And we also want to be mindful that, and socially just here, like we want to be socially aware to say that, you know, if I am privileged, clearly I am privileged, and I know that my adjustment shock is, I can manage that with the resources that I have, and I'm very blessed that I can continue to work, et cetera, et cetera. There are people in our communities and in our country that don't have that privilege. And I feel like adjustment shock has to do with, so adjustment shock is a really interesting kind of concept, but let's look at the idea of adjustment in general. Two concepts that you're really brilliant in bringing up and to help people. What's normal, right? Let's talk about that for a second. But also let's unpack this word of adjustment a little bit, right? What a brilliant word that we use 40 times a day. And we are all yoga teachers, so we really use that word 40 times a day. So let's call us, all three of us, on the carpet right here and see if, how we're doing with the word adjustment. But let's just talk about normal for a second, because it's, you know, this term socially constrained, right? Mm-hmm. So if we have terminology that's socially constraining, it's gonna, if we have a word that confines us, that it's supposed to be one way or the other, so it's a bipole, right? Then we're gonna have problems when it's not like that. Because why? We're gonna feel like something's wrong with us. Like what, how many times a day do you hear that from your friends, from your kids, from your colleagues? I hear it a lot. This will bring people to therapy because they feel that they're different than what's expected of them. So their adjustment is like, my adjustment must be wrong. But when, so if you think about normality in kind of three ways, normal can be what's typical, right? So that's kind of culturally driven. Most people do this. We know that this has a lot of problems. This kind of languaging has a lot of problems for people who feel different and for people that are different, because that means the majority gets to decide what's normal, right? We could say average, right? That's, let's just cross, like take a cross section. Most people adjust to coming out of a pandemic like this. We won't have very much data on that. We have to go back to like the 1800s and the 1200s for that. Not very helpful. Like Ghost Adventures comes up when you search on that, by the way. Like, okay, London Bridge. I'm like, this is not helping me. That's what I'm trying to help people with. But let's change that, right? What if the three of us hypothesize around the idea that normal is about wellness, right? What if normality was about what makes each individual the healthiest or the most well, right? Because there are three women in this room. And what's normal for all three of us, what makes us feel well and good, some are the same, right? Yoga. But we would practice, if we watched our sun salutation, each of us would do that very differently, right? Each of us would do that very differently within the constraints of what that primary asana is, right? So does that make sense? I hope I'm going in the right direction.
I love that.
Right. So the first thing to reassure people is that there, and this is becoming trite for people to say there is no normal, right? But those of us, and all three of us, are in the kind of the people business, right? Life coaching, teaching, and therapy. What does it mean when people feel not normal, not okay, right? We want to normalize that. So when we move towards wellness, we come from the shock. I like that. I usually use the example of, okay, so the container has been shaken, right? And so ideally, and in very American, I will say generically American, is to say, let's just get everything, like, let's get that sand back on the bottom of that container. Let's just get everything back to normal. Okay. Well, why don't people feel okay when we say, like, well, just push it down, right? Dana, like, why don't we just have no, if you don't act anxious, then you're not anxious. Stop being anxious, right? Well, what we know is that as soon as we tell people not to show symptoms, right? And I mean that in a very generic way, we all have symptoms, right? I'm not categorizing people that are anxious as having a mental illness. I'm just saying it's symptomology, it shows up. We feel worse, right? So when you think about wellness in the face of adjustment, when we think about this idea of adjustment, if everybody, imagine that everybody got permission to decide what made them feel the healthiest and the strongest and flourishing, right? The idea, whether you were a baby all the way to an extremely elderly person. What makes the difference in the adjustment of wellness is something called logical flexibility, right? And of course, babies don't have any control of themselves. And sometimes, unfortunately, the elderly don't have any control of themselves either, because we may take it away from them, or maybe their neurology takes it away from them. And that can happen for all. I just want to make sure, double check, am I still on track with what the topic? Okay.
Yeah.
You guys are like, oh, she's way off. Just rein me back in. You know, so this, when we think about the context of change and adjustment, when people want to get back to normal, I would like to kind of substitute that idea of normal for getting back to well, right? And this is showing up. There are people that are deciding that what they were doing before doesn't work for them, right? And this is because when left alone, right, when left alone, we are natural flourishers, right? When we are left to figure out who we are inclined towards growth and development. because that's called evolution, right? That's minor evolution. And again, I'm not an evolutionary biologist. I don't want to step on anybody's toes here, but we know that people are inclined to do good. People are inclined to make good choices if they have the opportunity to do that. And then, so, you know, while this is not, we're not really talking politically right now or socioculturally, we know that there are impacts that restrict people from accessing things that keep them healthy and well, right? And that's unfair. But when we talk about this idea of adjustment that is, that helps people thrive and helps people move into wellness, we look at the idea of strategies, right? So there's this concept called strategies. And strategies in the context of human development mean the way we solve problems, right? And I'll tell you this fascinating secret about family therapy. When we see families, what we notice is the strategies that they use to problem solve often are maintaining the problems. Is that not fascinating? Because people feel constrained. You know, there's a fascinating example, like your kid comes home late, so you yell at them and you ground them, and then they come late again, and so you have to yell louder and ground more. And then by the time they get to me, I'm like, okay, so your kid has not been out for like 2 years, and you are screaming your vocal cords off. So this is, you know, but these are strategies that you feel like you want to decrease this kind of negative outcome, but it's just actually maintaining it. So I find that fascinating. Mm-hmm. So the strategies, we want them to be in this other construct, which is called logical flexibility. You are going to do well if you can trust yourself to be flexible in a logical way. Flexible in a logical way. So too much flexibility, we call that chaos, right? The five-year-old is going grocery shopping. You're like all over the place. Think about your worst anxious day where you couldn't settle down at your desk and you were like, oh, there's a pencil. There's my coffee. There's this, there's that. And you're standing up and you're sitting down. That's extremely flexible, but it's also chaotic. Logical flexibility is that can you make adjustments? Can you make changes in a way that suits what is being required, right? Because the healthiest people choose solutions that fit the circumstances, but also keep themselves healthy, right?
So like as an example, it would kind of be like, I have 5 things to do for my household. And normally the chaotic me would do all 5. And they're 5 big right. tasks. They're not like just like picking up my laundry from the floor. They're 5 giant things. Right. So a logical solution would be start to delegate. Okay, well, your kid that's 5 years old can pick up their own clothes from the floor. And right. then, your husband can do one right. of those things. And then, you know, you could save one for tomorrow. It doesn't all have to get done today. So that's kind right. of what you see in those logical solutions.
Right. So what you're looking at coming out, and, you know, the most tender example that you used was the reentry of the deployed back into families. Like that's in its own category, but maybe we will learn. We don't know what this emergence is going to be like. We may be informed and learn from families like you, Kristen, where your husband's coming back in, right? You have a lot of information on how to adjust because it's weird to give up control, right? Right. We have families, and there's really some really great examples. The wine culture, which I'll talk about in a second, is a very interesting example. I'm not advocating it. I just don't want to talk about it. I do want to talk about it. And parents' control over education, right? Like these are things that and they are not comfortable. Like with that, asking a parent to do that and then asking them to not do that, you know, we're putting them in this odd situation. So if the data keep changing, right, if we come out of quarantine or sheltering in, and then we have to go back in, you know, that kind of impacts the way that we are adjusting because now we're like, we were over here and now we're over here. It's like saying your husband re-enters the home and then he leaves the home and then he comes back to the home. And not only are the kids attempting to adjust, you're attempting to adjust and he's attempting to adjust. You know, and the same thing when Dana, when you're talking about anxiety, right? If you have something that works and then the situation either escalates or repeats itself, you start to stumble around a little bit, right? Was my solution sufficient? And you start to doubt yourself. But if you can apply this idea that we are going towards a personal normal or familial normal, and hopefully a cultural normal of wellness, then our choices become more clear. What is the best thing for everyone in my family? And that's a very American thing to say too. And I don't mean to be trite, but what I mean is that structure, let's talk about families for a second. adjustment in families means that when we ask people to change, it is also logically flexible. We don't ask, we try not to ask our five-year-olds to have a job. There are families where kids, you know, my father, who's in his 80s, was working when he was four, right? That was part of their normal, right? That was part of their normal. We also know that there are children that that right now at a young age are helping to work or assisting. So, but we don't, the most tender, right? The most vulnerable, we hope we're asking them to make the least sacrifices when we adjust. The most strong or the strongest, we want them to also sort of adjust well or not make too many sacrifices so it starts to take away from their resources, but they probably have more to give. We want to see parents making sacrifice before children, right?
I'm glad you brought up the children, because that's one thing that I think when I watch the news or I'm looking around online or something like that, I don't think that, in my opinion, this is strictly my opinion, I'm seeing enough about how to help our youngest through this. And I am seeing a lot of my friends who are moms like me with kids about the same age that they've been pulled from school and now they're out of their routine. They're regressing physically, not physically, but their skills. They might be wetting the bed now, or they're very anxious and stressed out. So I like that you touched upon, I'm going to circle back around, but I like that you touched upon the idea of privilege. And there is the reality that there's not every family can get help coping with this. So I was curious, number one, about the children and what kind of recommendations or ideas that you might have for a parent helping their child with limited resources.
Right. So right now, therapy is probably more accessible than it's ever been. You just have to be brave enough to try it. And that's when I'm talking to families. They feel just like we have data now that says people are not going to the emergency room, right? I was just speaking to a nurse last night that was saying there's a lot of popped appendectomies, appendices, because people are waiting too long, right? Because they're afraid of being exposed to COVID-19. And that's, I guess we're going to say that's the reality that we live in. I am always hesitant to use language like that because that becomes a label. And when that's a label, then we make a reality around it, right? So what happens so those people that want to reach out should look into teletherapy services by just simply searching on the internet or reaching out to 211 on the phone, right? Because not everybody has the internet. But there is, and some, I will just plug myself for a second. I have 42 therapists that are waiting to give free therapy to anybody that needs it, and free family therapy or couples therapy. So I'll give you that information. That's the family clinic at Southern Connecticut State University. I hope that's okay that I did that.
Yeah. If there's a link or something for that, we'll put it in the details of this episode. Any relevant, anything that we talk about that can be found either on the internet or a phone number or whatever it is, we'll put it in the details of this episode so people can find
Awesome. I'll get that to you. That's great. So, you know, for parents, so, you know, we are new to this pandemic thing, but there have been crises that have separated families for a long, long time. Right. And, you know, those stories get very sad very fast when we look at other countries, including our own. And so what does a family do when the circumstances are sort of changing everything that they believed was keeping their family safe? Right. They have a entity that they can't control and may not even understand if they're not medical or they're not, like, they don't like to watch the news and things like that. They may not know. So what matters to children, right? What matters to children in adjustment is that the data, so there's some really great data from, believe it or not, this very long-term study that was done in Hawaii. And it was done over 40 or 50 years. And it was, they looked at families who were agricultural, and sometimes they were wealthy when the crops were good, and sometimes they were very poor. So those children were impacted chaotically for their entire lives. This study is important because until the study was done, we used to think at 18, if you had hard circumstances, that the book was written. You were like, you're going to have a troubled adulthood, and that bias still exists. So we know that parents, and the parents I talk to, are often very terrified, and I'm going to use that languaging, terrified that they're ruining their children. And part of that is because our culture is invested in scaring parents, right? If I scare you, then you will do everything in your power as parents to protect your child, including purchasing things, right? So unfortunately, in a capitalist society, and I'm not highly political, I'm not trying to make this like, blow this all up, but there is, children that know that, so what came out of the study, let me get back to that, came back to that people that cared for them outside of their families, right, like churches, even the military, something that was structured and organized made a huge difference. Staying in school made a huge difference. And it really didn't matter what they did with the schooling. It's the culture of just learning, right? The culture of learning, not learning perfectly, right? So a lot of things that parents are doing right now, say making that scary decision like, oh, I think that we're going to take like extra recess today, makes a huge difference. Because, and I'm not advocating not, I have a lot of friends who are teachers and I respect them to the moon and back. But what we know is what matters to children is that developmentally, they get most of what they need. That's called good enough parenting. Perfection has nothing to do with doing well in adulthood, right? Doing perfectly on schoolwork has nothing to do with positive outcomes. All of us in this little triad right here that I'm looking at on Zoom have recreated ourselves in short term and in long term, right? All of us have. We remember very little about when we didn't do our homework in second grade, right? But we do remember the teachers that cared about us. We do remember how our parents valued when we sang a song. We do. So being loved and cared about, which sounds so silly, and sometimes for families, we have to go back and talk about what is loving and caring is not doing for. Loving and caring is having conversations that are an interface for human development to occur, right? So what the hell does that, heck does that mean? Oops, sorry. So what does that mean? That means that you have developmentally appropriate conversations and listen to what your kids have to say, right? Why does that matter? Because they are starting to figure out what the paradigm is for them to figure out logical flexibility.
I sort of feel a little overwhelming. Even myself as a teacher, I've been through the psychology course of development with children. Are there resources out there that kind of give you that languaging of here's an appropriate way to take the conversation? I think most people have an idea or a gauge, but it can get a little sticky for people, or they might feel unsure of what to say or how to say it, when to say it, what to talk about. There are really big things that children need to be aware of, but how to approach that with a 5-year-old versus a 15-year-old, I think, is important. Do you know of any?
Right. So the Yale Child Study Center has information online. 211 is, again, a really great resource to direct you to any places that have resources. If you have the internet, you can use the internet and find pretty decent. Your pediatrician's office most likely has downloadable things. On my experiences, they have downloadable conversation starters. But, when we're talking about children, what is the job of the school-aged child? When we're talking, so 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds are reacting to our reactions, right? So those little people, our reaction, just think if you had a bad relationship, right? And people do, right? 56% of people that are married are going to at least go to therapy and might get divorced. There's no harm, no foul there, as long as you are maintaining your awareness of the developmental needs that are happening for you and your children. So now we have a pandemic and maybe like relational tensions, and everybody has them. What's important for kids to understand is not necessarily having a revealing conversation about that. Maybe not even a revealing conversation about the pandemic. But what do you do when things change? Like, how do we, this family deals with this difference by this. This is why we take our shoes off. This is why we wash our hands. This is how we do that. Because we're scared, we might be scaring others, But that comes full circle too, Kristen, and Dana, in that if you're scared, what do you do when you're parenting, right? Do you just swallow it? Probably. And then you have to, but the health, if we're talking about the new normal as wellness, how do we continue to adjust and process through changes without always stuffing things, right? So the healthier you are, the more accessible you are to your children. And there does seem to be, there's kind of a, you know, there are a couple of things that are happening that at least, and again, remember, I kind of have a skewed population because I work in family therapy, you know, sort of this overuse of relaxation. That could be wine, that could be CBD, that could be marijuana, whatever. I'm not judging it. I'm just saying that when we are stuck, that can become a much easier route to not process your feelings, because wellness is about rooting yourself and processing through how you feel, not necessarily with your kids, right? Adult stuff needs to stay adult stuff, or with a therapist. Does that make sense? So when we're thinking about reentry shock, the most important thing is that you're paying attention. How do you feel, right? You, if you are leading, you know, if you're leading your little troop, your family or your students or whomever, you're leading them into this new normal, right? This quote unquote new normal. You have to pay attention to how you feel, right? Clinicians always or should be identifying, for example, I'll just use me. I have to identify what's going on for me before I go into the clinical room, because I can't use that time to help myself. That's not right. That's not even really ethical or probably not legal. So self-examination, what are the tips for this? Self-examination is anything from journaling to just being in a quiet place without people bombarding you. We talk a lot about a news diet, right? There is very little that changes for you as long as you have emergency systems alerts on your phone or on your telephone, or you know, you are those loud things that happen here, at least down in the shoreline. We have those loud sirens that announce things because of hailstone. You know, to be on a news diet, because there is, with all due respect to people who report and investigate, the nightly news is redundant, right? As soon as you have saturation, which is a research term for once you hear the same thing more than twice, you've probably gotten all the information you're ever going to get. So what I often ask people is, why do you continue to go there to figure out something new? We can't get something new with old information, right? And so the news diet is not to bury our heads, because we have cultural responsibilities. We have civic duties, right? And those of us that have more try to give more, right? But, you know, peppering yourself with the evening news and the morning reports is probably unnecessary unless you're in a field that requires you to do that. Exposure to traumatic information will cause the brain to act in a way that's fight or flight, whether it's a tiny bit or a lot. And so people, when we're thinking about the new normal as the new wellness, we would want to be smart, right? So be smart and savvy and I guess we would say strategic about how you let information into your mental health. Actually information into your whole body. Avoidance could make you feel good for a little while, but so at the opposite end of the spectrum, but then you know you're avoiding something. So that's going to trigger a little bit of fight or flight too. Like, oh, is there something I should know? As soon as you hear somebody say something, oh. Yeah. But what being pragmatic about what you need in your family and what you need in your life, yeah? And then the next thing is, how do you apply the strategies to this quote unquote new wellness or new model? Like, what is important to your family? You know, masks are probably going to be a regular part of our lives. Your children, Kristen, will go back to classrooms that are, and you will go back to a classroom that is maybe you don't switch classes anymore, right? Like you teach more, you know, that's one of the things that's being discussed. You know, we all know that our yoga classes are going to look very, very different. So does that cause problems? No. But if we aren't logically flexible, right, if you are rigid about what should be, the only option you have when you are rigid in new circumstances is to break. Right? And that seems silly to say, but it's true, right? Dana, you're nodding. Like,
yeah. It's making me think of honestly, in life coaching, when we talked about, like, what if this event, what if what's going on right now is just neutral?
Right.
Like it's not good. It's not bad. This is just what's happening right now. It's just the fact of the matter is we have to wear a mask. It's right. Not good. It's not bad, but you have right. to do it, you know?
Right.
And this whole, I mean, my wheels, I'm like tunnel vision and everything that you're saying, This is bringing up a lot, and I'm thinking about, like, when you're talking about logical flexibility and going back out into the world, like, one of the things, I can be really hard on myself. Like, I can, if I sleep in, if I stay up too late, if I do things, if I do behaviors that in the past have led down a bad path that I don't make me feel good. If I do those just once, I'm like, oh my God, here we go. You're doing it again, Dana. Stop it.
A little rigid.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got scared, right?
Yeah.
Fear leads to rigidity. Yeah.
Yes. And so one of the greatest things that this quarantine has given me is I've really learned to letting go, like sleep in. If you want to sleep in, sleep in.
Right.
Like, when else in my life until I retire am I going to be able to sleep until 9:30 on a Tuesday? Like, that's just not. So enjoy this. Don't be hard on yourself. And now that we're slowly starting to reopen, and like, now I've just recently started a new job that I'm going to have to go in. I'm like, part of me was like started tightening up around having a schedule again and having to go to work. And I have to remind myself, like, okay, it's okay. Right. Like, what I'm trying to say is, like, so I want to incorporate these things from the quarantine that I've learned. Like, I've loved the creative journaling prompts that you've given, Julie, which we need to link those as well, because they're amazing. They're in the Yoga Shop Sacred Circle group that I love it. I've never ever done art therapy. I've never done creative journaling other than in our life coaching course. And I've loved it so much. So there's stuff like that that I know I need to pull with me when I go back out into the real world.
Yeah.
And part of me is terrified that I will not. And then I'm going to just slip back into old Dana and take too much on, say yes to everything, get up at 5:30 in the morning and not get home until 9 o'clock at night. And like, I don't want that life anymore. And I want to fit more me time into my schedule. And there's a part of me that's really scared that
there's the wellness piece, right? Like,
exactly.
How do people change? Let's just like switch. There's two things that are brilliant in what you're saying. You know, so when we, like, I just want to dial back to parents for one second, because one of the critical concepts that we can give our kids is the ability to self-soothe. And we hear this in Dana's narrative here. You know, I love what you're saying, but you learned to be successful by being hard. And we know that rigidity is going to lead to fracturing when something bad happens. And fracturing can look like beating yourself up. Where you're talking, what you're talking around is this idea that we can self-soothe as things are not perfect, right? Things are not okay. And what does that look like, right? Self-soothing is so foreign to all of us, right? Self-soothing to say, like, this right now is as good as it gets. And it's okay, because we get afraid. We get afraid that if performance is not at 11, then we are not going to be safe, right? So at the basis of this, you know, we can make fun of like American culture and this like kind of rat race culture that we live in, and we're on the Northeast, so that rat race culture is very prevalent, right? Very, very prevalent. We can say that all day, but the truth of the matter is that at the bottom of it, people are running from fear. Right. And that makes us all very human. Right. As soon as we get to the, and we have to practice this very difficult concept in being yogic of like sharing one being. Right. And I'm not the person really to lecture about that, but I really think about it a lot when I'm struggling with how people are responding to things outside of my therapy and my classrooms, of course. But when I'm just a human being, you know, struggling that I want them to do it differently because I'm scared. Right. So my self-soothing is really important here, right? When we practice self-soothing, we have so much more potential, right? Like if you are kinder to yourself, that's different than saying you never have to do anything again, right?
Right.
And so I love the idea that you give yourself permission. So re-entry, right? As we re-enter to the new normal, give yourself permission to have feelings and experiences and give yourself a minute to process it. That's the other piece of it. Give yourself a minute, because we are a fight or flight culture. We are a fight or flight culture. And, you know, when we talk about things, people having hyper reactions from anything and screaming at somebody in the grocery store to shooting a gun, I'm knocking on wood here. You know, those are often not processed reactions. Those are fight or flight reactions. And I'm not defending any of them because that, you know, we practice not harming people and that's obviously harming people. And so, you know, this looming adjustment, number one, is going to be different for every single person. There's also going to be grief. I want to make a short point on that, that there are people that are learning so much, right? And that, you know, I just got this wonderful text message from one of my dearest cousins who's like a like event organizer in a big city, and she is like, loves it, right? She's the one that you go in her house and like her table, you're like, how did this happen? She's like, I don't know, this happened. And she means it. She's not like, hey, you're a scrub. She's just like in her Memorial Day weekend beginning, and she's just looking around saying, I don't know. I don't think that rat race is for me anymore. I think I might be someone else. I think I've learned that I'm someone else. And so I take issue when people call that privilege. I understand that we have the privilege, people who are privileged, like myself, where, you know, my job continued, this, that, and the third. I do have more time to journal and process. I understand that. However, I've met people that are in like what I would call difficult to dire circumstances who are also deeply processing who they are and what's meaningful to them, right? We don't want to turn privilege into anti-bias, right? Like we don't want to turn it into like there are people that don't have, aren't doing the same intellectual work that we are doing. They are, right? Everybody is. Everybody is. And everyone has a right. Everyone has a right to be a beginner, right? That's my favorite adjustment terminology. Let yourself be a beginner, right? Yeah. One of my favorite things to say as a yoga teacher is let yourself wobble here, right? I'm not insisting that you wobble, but if you are, can it be okay, right? Because the best way to have your balance is to learn about wobbling, right? And if the country, right, if we as a culture learn about this huge wobbling, right, whether it's wellness wobbling or psychological wobbling or resource wobbling, you know, how do we get our balance back? How do we get our balance back? And that could be very exciting. The new wellness, the new normal could be a very exciting thing that we are, you know, a caring, more thoughtful community. Communities, plural. You know, I don't know.
I hope so. I hope so.
Does this give you some things to think about, or is this useful? Yeah.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
There's an exercise that I was actually just given by a friend of mine. Her name is Giselle Foss, and I'm also going to link her in this as well. We were talking about like processing emotions and everything, and it's something that is anybody can do anywhere at any time, really. I think you do need somewhat of a safe environment to do it. So it might just be a solo thing that you do, like you said, creating space. Mm-hmm. But every now and then we get caught in emotion, right? Like it normally we think of like anger or stress or things like that because they're big and they're fiery. They're useful, right? So it's like when that strikes, you know, pause for a second, figure out where that's landing in your body, you know, sometimes your chest or your throat or your arms or your fist, and then asking that emotion, what do you need right now?
What do you need? Yeah.
I need to go for a run. I need 5 minutes to go into the bathtub and soak. And it's like, you know,
I need to write it out. Yeah.
I need to write it out. I need to art therapy it out. Right. And since Dana had brought it up too, I hope it's okay to say this. You do have a workbook coming out based off of art therapy. Can you just talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's a valuable tool for teachers, for therapists, for anyone leading a retreat. I kind of heard a little snippet about it. So
right. Well, I appreciate that. And so I just want to be clear that I am not certified as an art therapist. I have to say that, you know, those like taglines. But one of the things that my research interest is my this absolute passion in life, and it came late, and Brené Brown has talked about creative injuries and those kind of things, you know, where American culture doesn't value doodling, for example, right? We're just starting to value this because it might have looked like a waste of time. And these all come from important places where, you know, when a country is trying to get back on its feet, they teach children that you better walk straight and get ready to go to war, right? That happened after the post-industrial revolution. That's a weird way to introduce my little workbook, isn't it? So one of the things that I started with my graduate students, because I was like, oh my God, and no offense, Kristen, but American education has obviously cornered the market on the perfect essay, right? Because I was getting, and these are graduate students, right, who are going to become family therapists, and we're a little bit wild and woolly in the family therapy. Like, you have to be able to access a lot. And we have quite a reputation in the world of therapy. So what happened, why this was born, this workbook was born, is that I asked them in our human development class to write the story of their final essay, which was going to be their final grade, but I didn't want to see any words. This literally, and I also told them I wasn't going to answer any questions because my other research interest is millennial and Gen Z parenting, and my former roles were to help faculty adjust to millennial and Gen Z differences in the classroom, and I'm passionate about millennials. I'm passionate that you're going to lead the way, and it's going to be amazing.
I can't wait to talk more with you about this another time.
So I started this process of asking my students to create their expressions in symbols, right? And there's tons of research and people that are much more talented than me, drawing on the right side of the brain, Betty Edwards, like The Artist's Way, Julia Cameron, all of those are talented people who could better explain this. But when we're asked to put things into symbols, right, when we ask, say you're having a retreat and you're going to do your icebreaker, everybody hates ice, right? We all like want to leave the room right now. But if you ask people to write something down, like write down their thoughts, feelings, whatever, and then translate that into shapes, and then we talk about the shapes and what was explained here, we've gotten access to the whole brain here, and there's a lot more depth. So the workbook itself is to, most people call me and talk to me about activities similar to what we're doing in the yoga shop now. Is there an activity that I can use with my, with my like work retreat or in my therapy? You know, how can we work with this family? You know, like shared squares in a couple. If you guys are in relationships, you can do this cool thing that pretend the rug is 12 by 12 squares and you just stand face to face, no language. And then one partner makes a move, and then the other partner makes a move based on how they feel, and you let them, no languaging. It is fascinating to see how the pursuer distancing. I'm getting off track, I know that, but there's so many exciting things that can be done without writing things down. And so that's the handbook. Da, 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 da.
It's, I like I said, I had never done anything like that before, other than the things that we had done in our life coaching training. And I have to say, like, the perfectionist in me that like when I'm writing or when I am draw, like I won't even draw or get, like I'm not bad at it. It's something that I actually really enjoy, like painting and drawing and all of that. And I won't do it because I'm like, well, it's not going to be perfect, so why do it? And then doing your prompts, the first one that you did when we were on your Facebook Live. And you said, write down some words, and I don't remember exactly what. And then you said, okay, now draw over them, draw circles over them. And I was like, right. What?
What's happening?
Wait a second.
I know what I was talking about. What if there's a quiz? That's what everyone thinks. What if there's a quiz?
Yeah. Like, what if I'm going to show this to somebody? Like, okay, I'm not going to show it to anybody. Nobody needs to see any of my stuff. And it's opened doors for me. Like, the second one then that I did, I actually did send you a picture, Julie, of it.
Little tiny circles. Yeah.
Yes. I remember processing my thoughts. And like, I honestly had this one word I just kept on, or a few words I kept on writing just, and any other time I would have been like, what a waste of paper. Like, this is just useless. Why am I writing this? But I just couldn't stop. It was like my hand was taking over my body, and it was like, it was crazy. It felt really good.
Things are happening when you use that whole brain. And that kind of circles back to adjustment to re-entry, right? That performance and product is not primary. You know, it's one of those alliteration kind of things that we say. So we get kind of put on us, and we live in this sort of really fascinating capitalist society. So performance and product are sold to us as primary. mm-hmm. right? Like children need to produce something. You just have to go to Home Depot on bird house making day. And I didn't want to, you can't film minors. So, but I really wanted to use it in my development class because all the parents hovering over the kids making the birdhouses so that they looked like a birdhouse, that's about the product. And we have this idea that the product is going to make success. And that's not accurate. That's not accurate. Success comes from flexibility and problem solving. It comes from the ability to problem solve. And it comes from our ability to be, I'm going to use the word enjoyment, like to bring joy to what we're doing, even if it's like making tiny circles, or maybe you're filling out your tax form. And that's the silliest thing that I've ever said. But, what if there was less burden in the have-tos, right? If there's not a demand product afterwards, right? And what everyone says to me, every single person says to me, well, how are my kids going to get into college then? Well, number one, there are no colleges right now. No, just kidding. You don't have to worry about that. But here's the thing is that who does well, and this is my other sort of area of interest with suicide prevention in post-secondary environments. So in adjustment to college, so this is probably the last thing I say because I'm just going on and on. I feel guilty now. But when we look at freshman adjustment to college, it is changing. And freshmen struggle. Whether you're at a top 10 university or you're at like the littlest, safest university that you thought you could go to. We know that freshmen have a very hard time because of the whiplash they have from going to the millennial Gen Z environment into their college environment. Now, again, when we talk about these statistics, they don't apply to everybody, right? We always talk about the middle of the bell curve. So that's what we talk about. And, the adjustment, when we break it down, what makes students successful leaving their homes and educational environments where there has been an adult, even in neglectful homes, with all due respect, there has been an adult helping them use their words from preschool all the way forward. There's been a coach, there's been a teacher, there's been an after-school person, there's been somebody telling them how to use their words and how to figure out problem solving. And that's great because we want, American culture has made child development about safety, preserving children because they can do amazing things. It started with Nadia Comaneci and her perfect 10 in gymnastics back in the late 70s, right? And then we started to realize that children themselves can be a product, right? They can perform, they can do more. And that's true. The brain has unlimited capabilities and we love that. Now we know that infants can talk, right? It's fantastic. But what ends up mattering, right, when you do well, is that you can process that, number one. Because Dana, you just gave a poignant example of doing well and not being able to accept it, right? Being more concerned with what was happening, whether it was a product or not, if that makes sense, than the experience of it, right? And so when we help students or our children adjust to college, we want them to take advantage of the circumstances of college, because that makes a difference later in life, because that's experience. If I do it for them, right? So the helicopter parents, lawnmower parents, all those kind of things, we're scared, right? We're doing things, we're getting out in front of our children to help their adjustment. Well, that's not adjustment, because adjustment is shocking. And that comes full circle back to how Kristen kind of launched the podcast tonight, is that, okay, so how are you and your children or the people you are responsible for ready for shockwaves? What skills do you have in your home? What skills help you personally? When we talk about that personal wellness development in the shockwave, what do you need, right? Like rigidity fractures, right? It has to be perfect. Well, perfect doesn't make any space for failure, right? People will get sick again, right? I'm not trying to be a harbinger of we will be frustrated in November. I believe in epidemiology. I believe in what the infectious disease people are telling us. So that's my bias there. But, we believe that this will happen again. So what are we putting in place to be prepared, which is now starting to be a buzzword and a kind of a fight or flight buzzword, but to deal with it? Like, what do we put in place to deal with it? What is logical flexibility and a move towards wellness in each family and each person. What does that conversation is rarely had. What does wellness look like in this family? People take a long time to answer me when I ask that, you know, what's wellness in your couples? Like when you're in a couple, what does wellness look like? Cause it's co-created between the two of you. Right.
That's a great prompt for anybody listening right now. What does wellness look like for yourself,
right,
for your family, for your relationship with whoever?
I think that's I think that's also very grounding, because even as you were just talking, Julie, I was thinking back to earlier when we were talking about I don't remember what it was specifically that we were talking about, but that sometimes when you give things a name, it can either make
be confining.
It can either bring you some ease or it can be anxiety inducing. Like even just I remember learning about this even just in school, like getting a mental health diagnosis, like anxiety or like depression, it can make you go like, oh my gosh, or it can be freeing because now you have a name for your symptoms.
Right.
And so even just reentry shock, people might be like, wait, I thought everything was cool. Like going back, I was cool with that, but now like, should I be thinking harder about this? So I think what it goes back to is that grounding element and asking, what is wellness for me? Is wellness for me calling this reentry shock and actually naming it? Or is wellness for me saying, I'm good, I'm going, like,
let's see what happens. Logical flexibility would be like, I think I have the tools I need, but I need more data. One of the things that we don't allow kids to learn is, I'm not bashing teachers at all, is that the permission to ask for more data. If you don't know, you don't know, right? And that's okay, right? But how do we get more data? That's important. Your follow-up questions with yourself and with your family, that's a really good question, sweetie. Like, how would we know if we got that information, right? I really like the idea of wondering about adjustment and what we might need about adjustment, but what would that look like if we had it, right? Mm. In family therapy, there's a school of thought that you identify what's working and keep doing it, right? What's working right now and keep doing it. And I add the developmental question, is it working? Is that structure and application working for every developmental level in your, because we don't want to see people have, you know, that mom that you see that, you know, the person in the family that identifies as the mom, you know, the person like doing the laundry, like making cupcakes, doing this, doing that, doing this, playing soccer, blah, 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 blah. We don't want all the responsibility of life on one person in any kind of, you know, grouping, right? Whether it's a group home or a family, right? We want to share responsibility that's developmentally appropriate, right? And we know that people learn about how they feel by doing stuff, right? We do a lot of emotional education and that's great. And all of us, if we had to go to that workshop right now for human resources, we'd be rolling our eyes because we're like, I don't want to hear about this. And I know to call 211 or 911. I know. It becomes numbing. But what's really exciting is that the more challenges, and not horrific challenges, but age-appropriate challenges we offer to ourselves and to others that we're responsible for, the more kind of confidence and tools, right? So the last thing is that what's in your toolkit? I ask, I mostly work with adult women and they, you know, their toolkits are very small. They have one or two tools that they keep using over and over again. And that doesn't work. You know, like Dana, you made a good point. Is naming anxiety or depression helpful? Or are now we facing this kind of bias that's in your toolkit? Do you live in a family of bias that says mental health doesn't count, right? And we want to talk about the fact that that's not fair and that should change. And I wish that I had a magic wand and I could do that. However, what's really true with your kids, with yourself, or with the people you're responsible for is like, okay, when that happens, what do? Right? When you meet the bias, when somebody tells you you can't, yeah, you might get rigid and say, I will, and I will do this. And that would probably be a first step, right? So everybody that's a human being should remember that you have an opportunity to be a beginner, to be anxious and scared or rigid or angry and be all those things. And like that other podcast you referred to process those feelings. But to remember, right? American culture is so good for the movie scene, right? That this happens and then the ending should happen. But what we know is that life is a process. And it's a micro process. It's a internalized process, intra, micro, meso, and macro. So it's micro, just me, meso, everybody I'm interacting with, and also the larger pictures, the larger environments that I'm in. And all those interfaces require me to have a toolbox to figure out how to get through those relationships. And now in the macro, we have people emerging from their little homes or wherever they are back into a COVID positive environment, whether it's actually out there in their communities or not. We consider the world out there until we have an immunization that it's a COVID positive environment, whether people believe it or not. Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Hope this was helpful.
Very helpful.
Very. I just wish you could be on our podcast every single week. I love this conversation. So I love talking to you. I love your insight.
Anything I can do to help, because I want to help you launch this, because the bigger this gets, the more important information. And I'm not talking about myself. I think in listening to these, I find that you're bringing really important stuff to people who may not have thought about the things you're talking about, which is really cool in the world of podcasts, right? So I really admire you.
That means a lot coming from you.
Spectacular. And you did it, right? And it's like almost meant to be, right? Here this comes. And now you're like this positive, kind of thoughtful, and also gritty. Like it's a little gritty. It has a little grit to it. Mm-hmm. You know, challenging people. Take out your journals. Like, here we go. That's what people need. They want to be challenged. Nobody wants to be just left behind as a nothing. Nobody wants that.
Right? I think our environment, the yoga shop, is an empowerment environment, and it's contagious. And when you find that empowerment and you see other people living it and giving back to it, I think it just perpetuates. It's that wheel that starts to spin faster. And I think it's just, again, I owe a lot of this to you, to be honest, and Annie and Kim and the whole community. So
you've done all the work yourselves, though, like honestly. Like it's just like you're saying, this podcast is affecting people you don't even know, right? Like you'll get a letter sometime later on and they're going to be like, wow. And that is the most important thing, is we give that back to them. Like this, you guys are doing this for your wellness. Like this is something that was in your heart and your spirit. And this is the expression of who you are as human beings. It's so critical that that is out there. Even if not one person listened, it is critical that it's out there, because this was generative things are healing things, and you're affecting, you have no idea, right? So cool. So I was really happy to be on here.
So obviously we can find you at the yoga shop in Old Saybrook. You are tagged, some of your resources are tagged on the yogashop.us website. But where else can we find you? Where can our listeners find you?
So those of you that are interested in the family therapy either program to become a family therapist, or you're interested in the Soldiers Home program, which is free therapy for soldiers and their families for as long as they need it, or free therapy right now, family therapy, individual therapy, couple therapy, that would be at Southern Connecticut State University Marriage and Family Therapy Clinic, and that's 203-392-6413. And my colleague and co-professor Katrina will take care of your intake, even if you just have questions. I can also be found on Psychology Today if you have questions about finding a therapist or finding free therapy. A lot of us are doing pro bono work out there. The yoga shop is doing a lot of pro bono work out there. And I think that's all the places that you can find me. You can find me in my home, but you can't come there because I have a vacuum. So but you can't come here because it's COVID-19. That's why you can't come
here. Excellent. And then we have one more question, I think. And this may be putting you on the spot, but every time we have a guest on, it's kind of a pay it forward environment. So if there is a charity that is near and dear to your heart that you want us to link in your bio for our listeners, what charity would you
like? Veteran Suicide.
Veteran Suicide?
Yep.
Okay. We will do that too.
That's my favorite. Yep. So I guess that's a wrap. And
thank your husband for sparing you for an extra hour of your time.
I know. We were like, can we have you for 20 minutes? And now.
I was like, I can't believe, I was like, they must hate me. I'm like, oh my God, I must talk so much. Because I was like, oh my God, I was sitting out on the deck with my husband. And I was like, oh, it's a podcast, which I forget what a podcast is. I'm like, I actually, like, I was in my yoga clothes. And I'm like, I better put on like a shirt, But then I realized that it's audio.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
My son is like,
okay. We honestly, Julie, you are like way up there on people that were like, I don't know if she would ever actually like want to be on or like have time to be on, but like anytime. In our wildest dreams, like Julie, we want to have Julie
that's
on.
That's such a compliment, but I feel, know this, I'm not trying to make you feel good. I feel equal to you guys. Like I want to share what I have because, you know, the ivory tower is only good and it's very isolated, right? Like where I got, you know, research this, that, the third. But it's what my role is in life is that I want to take that and I want to give it and share it with everybody and like co-create things. And that this feels very valuable to me. So I'm very appreciative. Anytime you want consultation, anytime you think I'd be helpful, I am so happy to help you.
Thank
Please,
you.
Please
so
don't
much.
Ever be nervous about texting me. Next away.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so Thanks. Much.
You're so welcome. See you soon. Bye.
Bye. Thank you all so much for listening. We hope that you enjoyed. And again, if you want to reference any of those services that we discussed in this episode, they're all free and they're all linked below in the details. Have an awesome week, you guys.